University. Radio
Nottingham. Hello and welcome back to The Pulse. Now we are going to be discussing how most children sleep with mobile phones beside their bed. So according to an annual survey by Childwise of young people's use of media, more than half of children say they sleep with their phone by their bed, with 57% always taking their phones to bed, 44% who feel uncomfortable without phone signal, and 42% who say that they keep their phones on them at all times and never turn it off. And the report also found that children getting mobile phones at earlier age, with most having one by the age of 7, and the average minutes spent on mobiles by 7 to 17-year-olds is about 3.5 hours a day. And researchers are saying this is dominating children's lives, and it's very tough for parents to put limits on how much they're using them and what they're using them for and what they're seeing on them. And for more than 70% of children, their phones will be connected to the internet, which makes, you know, phones a gateway onto the online world, making this even more difficult for parents to see what's going on online. And with the rise of a variety of social medias, such as Snapchat, Instagram, and TikTok, it's made the online world more accessible and more fun for young people, along with lots of children watching less and less television in their living rooms. So I'm just going to open up to the panel. What do you think that kids are spending too much time on their phones compared to when we were growing up? And do you think it's good or a bad thing?
7 is really young. I got my phone year 6, so what's that, like 10, I think? Or maybe my 11th birthday, something like that. And I didn't really use it. I sort of just like connected with people from primary school before I left and then sort of was able to talk to them on BBM, if you remember those days. But like, and that was sort of what we did. But back then, like, I remember having sort of access to the internet, and some of the stuff that I do remember being able to access was quite shocking. And I don't think that that's, or I think definitely there's been a lot of steps made in the last 8 years or whatever to get to a point where there are a lot of restrictions that parents can put in place. And there are things where you can have like smart watches for children that then you can get access to the internet, but it's also everything goes through like their parents' phone, and there is a lot more control sort of being able to be to be available. And if parents sort of have an open conversation, I know that's not always possible sort of given circumstances, but it does make it sort of easier to have an ongoing conversation. I know it's not in every family where that's sort of the environment, but if you're in a environment and that family sort of situation is possible, then there definitely is like an ability to have sort of a clear restriction and that sort of thing.
My mum has she pays my phone bill, and she controls the she has the controls on it. And so to this day, I'm 20 years old, just to clarify, there are certain things I can't access on my 4G, and I think you can figure out what kind of things I can't access. I think it's useful for children to, it's useful for parents, sorry, to be able to control what their children are viewing. But at the same time, me and my little brother figured our way around it very, very quickly. We used VPNs. That's all we did. Do you know what I mean? It's a lot easier, and especially for kids growing up in a generation of technology, it's going to be really easy for them to find their way around these parental controls. I mean, I know I did, and this was before the internet really, I mean, obviously the internet took off. I'm not 30 years old. But before it became so, you know, we got these touchscreen phones and it became so easily accessible.
Like when I was little, I think my first phone did not have the internet at all. There was, you know, I barely used it, and especially where I lived, which is, you know, very much in the middle of nowhere, opposite a farm. I could not watch videos on the internet. It was just not possible. It just was not fast enough. So now that, you know, the internet speed is better and everything else is much faster and more accessible, it can, you know, for kids, I think that, you know, they're using it. And I think also parents, even though they're trying to restrict time on, you know, some kids use on mobile phones, they also use it as a parenting tool. Like, you know, like if you're trying to do something, you just sort of whip out the iPad, and like I've seen parents do that, and they just give it to the kid on the train, which can be incredibly useful. But in other ways, you know, like especially using your mobile phone in bed can really affect your sleep, and having it there sort of creates some, you know, an anxiety of if it's going to go off, when it's going to go off. You're seeing, you know, people, you know, you're waiting for something to happen. Even in the middle of the night, it could wake you up. And that in anticipation could be quite unhealthy for kids, because, you know, sleep deprivation is can be quite damaging for mental health from a young age. So it could be, it can be quite problematic.
So, like, three things. The first one is, I don't get why kids have, like, these £1,000 phones and stuff when they're, like, 11. I had, like, a 20 quid LG for, like, most of high school, and I did fine. Number two is using phones to soothe toddlers when they're having a tantrum, or if you're doing other things, can actually have an adverse effect on their emotional and social development, because they're not having that interaction with their parents, especially if it's used constantly. And number three, I think it's more social media than the phones, but obviously most people use their phones to access social media, is that these really young kids have got social media, which opens access to cyberbullying, makes them more vulnerable to it, and also gives cyberbullies a platform for bullying. And number two, this is especially after sort of like the restrictions on Tumblr and stuff. A lot of the sexual content that was allowed on platforms like Tumblr has moved to public social media like Twitter, where a lot of sort of like sex workers and things will use Twitter to advertise and things, because they can no longer do it on the other platforms. And when you've got children, especially ones that lie about their age to get onto Twitter, interacting with adults who don't know that they're children, surrounding sexual content or other things that should really be left for an older age, it is very problematic, especially like skewing their views of relationships, what is what's appropriate for their age, and also makes it very dangerous for adults that don't realise that they're talking to children. So it's a bit of one, bit of the other. So you can have kids talking to adults that they don't know are adults, and then adults talking to kids that they don't know are kids.
Do you know what I think? I won't pretend this is an original point. My dad said this to me, actually, and it's something I've always thought about. Is he said to me when he was growing up, if you had an argument with someone at school, you went home and you forgot about it. You know, you got on with your day. You went and, you know, went, maybe saw some other friends, maybe saw your parents, played with the dog. Do you know what I mean? But with children in today's age, you have an argument at school. That argument then continues and multiplies and gets so much worse, and more people get involved, all in the space of a few hours. And it's all at the click of a finger. Like, that's that. I think that was really crucial, because me growing up, I didn't get a phone until I was about 14. And I remember I used to have some arguments with people, and the arguments would continue into the evenings, and we'd have these massive text rows going back and forth, back and forth, and I'd wound up really, really upset. My dad would come in and be like, just put the phone down, just don't reply, why? And I think it's a lot easier said than done, and I think that is, I think, a really important point of it's very hard to get away from it all.
Yeah, and I'm just going back to what you were saying earlier, Grayson, about sort of being exposed to sort of explicit content and getting the wrong idea of sort of relationships and everything. I've heard a lot of people, especially LGBT people from, you know, community people, that they end up having to learn sort of relationships and sexual education from online because they're not being taught it. And I think that's also a problem, because the fact that children are viewing these things online, they may be lacking in the education that they're getting in schools or from parents, and maybe that is something that we need to improve, so that kids aren't going straight to the internet to look up these things. They should be able to ask people that, you know, and real life people who know about these sort of things, rather than getting the wrong idea. I don't know if anyone agrees with that or...
Yeah, I guess it's just really tricky, isn't it? Because I guess if you were sort of to look at it probably through rose-tinted glasses, you could be like, if you introduce it sort of to... If you introduce concepts to children young and then able to sort of give them a good foundation of knowledge and sort of the idea of there's so obviously so many... We use the internet for, like, all of our university stuff, but primary schools now use, like, they do online math things, and there's all of these sorts of apps for toddlers to, like, learn their letters and all of that sort of thing. But then... Obviously, that probably is potentially looking at it in a very naive way of not considering all of the other things that sort of come into play. And it is a fine line, and it is a tricky balance to sort of try and understand what is best. I don't envy sort of parents trying to make that decision.
I really like the point of children will be, they look up a lot of things, and they learn a lot of things that they should have been taught in school. And while that is a positive, I think a really crucial point is that, obviously, as we know as adults, not everything on the internet is true. It's a lot of it is just a lot of rubbish. People make things, you know, like you Photoshop tweets and stuff, and suddenly you think a celebrity's been massively racist, and it turns out it was, you know, some idiot behind the computer's just changed the name on it. Do you know what I mean? And I think the naivety of children combined with the, like, vast information and misinformation that is the internet is a very dangerous combination, because I'm quite naive in the sense, if I read something, I'm like, oh, that must be true. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of young people would agree with me on that, particularly growing up. You read things, and you, especially in newspapers or on things that look like newspapers online, you read an article and you go, well, that must be true, that I believe in that now. And then you read another article and you go, ooh, maybe I don't agree with that. And then you read another one, you're, actually, I definitely don't agree with that. And I think particularly for children, a lot of them will just take what they read at face value. And I think that's a massive negative, really. And I think that's something we need to, if you do want to give your children the access to the internet from the get-go, the, you know, earliest age possible, you should really, really teach them that not everything they read is true. Mm. And I think that's important.
Yeah, definitely very important. Right, that's what we've got time for today. Thank you for listening to The Pulse.